interrupting the current neo-uranial climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricket Tube Busting Episode BTWRLM 629. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Because you don't know what you miss until you make that switch and get you behind the woodshed. That does a reality. Because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. And I hope you've learned this. Those of you who listen to me, you engage yourself, you get into black and white, you start applying it, and there's really nobody that can compete against what's going on because it seems almost everywhere is corrupt. And then you're looking real good. You're not called an extremist because you just throw out that black and white that they were supposed to be following. And that's the thing that I've been focusing on. But there's a way to go through doing things correctly. Why are the officials doing it most incorrectly? And still, we're looking, as I said, the due process is very important. It may be our last right, actually, that we have, that actually is given a very high standard still. And I think part of what I've been saying without saying it is when we see that disappear, you better watch out. But until then, due process is very important. I'm going to keep hitting on this. Because I see so many people dismissing it because of the Ferners, and they don't understand they're a Ferner to the system. And pretty soon, a national interest comes up, and they become the focus, and they haven't figured that part out. And so I've been a harpy on all, how this thing works. Again, listen very carefully. Supreme Court gives Trump a win on migrants. But if you've heard the last quite a few episodes, where did Trump fail? And what did the court carve out to make sure that Trump does it correctly when he deports, when he can win on migrants? Supreme Court on Monday delivered a victory to President Trump on immigration. It ruled the White House can revoke temporary legal protections that had been granted to about 350,000 Venezuelans in the U.S. The move now opens the door to deportation. Only one justice descended to the decision. Ketanji Brown Jackson was that Supreme Court justice. Neither the majority nor Jackson publicly explained their position, which is typical in emergency appeals such as this one. I want to reiterate again, see what the chaos does. And the Supreme Court's having to come back really fast on emergency responses, and they are, which is very interesting to me. You and I go do this, we may not even get it to the Supreme Court, let alone be heard within a year or so. And so this is very interesting for me to watch as I've been through these various court conditions at different levels, federal, state, and to watch how this has been playing out. So we see now that the privilege that the government gives here, that temporary legal protection, is the one the government can take away. And I want you to think through what you might have as a benefit that the government has given you that they might be able to take away. But also notice, to do that, it takes that due process. So when they say they have the right to deport, does that now just enable Trump to throw people out of the country without more? Of course not. The statement was it opens them to deportation, which the Supreme Court has said requires what? And I keep being a harpy on this. I want people to get this. Because what another fundamental right is being destroyed is that habeas corpus. And that was critical in the Great Coby Swindle. It's critical whenever you are unlawfully restrained of your liberty. It's not just the government that can do that. And so that another peculiarity, if you will, this remedy of habeas corpus, it's a hybrid remedy. It's equity and common law. Someone else can file the petition for someone has probable cause to believe they have their liberty unlawfully restraint. And so this is a very powerful 2 points, and due process in both of them are under attack. And I don't know why Trump wants to continue down this road, but he is, and that's signaling to me a whole other thing. So the government can deport, but only after lawful due process and a finding that deportation of an individual is lawful. The first Venezuelans received legal protections in 2021 with the White House under President Biden concluding that it would been unsafe to deport them to their homeland under the regime of Nicolas Maduro. And that there is one reason for due process. You might send someone back to a country that will kill them. So this is a caution people, be careful what you wish for there, And be careful what you're allowing by wanting to condemn someone and turn them back over to someone who does want to kill them. That's what I'm talking about. Against deportation, you may have to prove that you deserve it. But that's there, because this can very well happen. And if you notice and carefully watch these things, and even a national interest does not allow Trump to remove that due process protection, despite the national interest allowing the removal of a prior protective order. So understand, we're working in the administrative executive side, then we're looking at the law. When you apply the law, what does that do? The protections had been extended to run through 2026, but the Trump administration argued they were no longer in the national interest. So national interest doesn't trump the due process that now has to be given to them. The lower court judge disagreed per AP, and the case ended up at the Supreme Court. Again, as I said, it would have to come through because it was opposite the national and the law. So it went right on up, and it was an emergency situation and petition. So a national interest can be used by the executive in revoking a protection order it issued. And that we think about that, that makes sense, right? What it issues, it can revoke. Now, the next step is, what is it going to do under a law? And this, it can't dispose of the due process relative to an agency or judicial proceeding required by law. And that makes sense, too. Well, I suppose only to us that care to continue to think, I suppose. As I see lots of mindless people making lots of comments about things. Because, again, they're further. Let's get rid of them. And this requirement for due process when handling immigrant claims has not been a question until Trump. And I'm glad to see the due process still figures into what government is required to provide before doing to people what the current tyrant in office dictates. That gave people a way to provide an objective defense against arbitrary and capricious power. Understand what I'm saying? I'm expanding that to we the people. Otherwise, here, we the people will be in for a serious surprise, as I've been saying over and over again. So why is this peacemaker Trump making war on the laws of the United States if he intends to make America great again? And why do people cheerlead for such treason, rooting for the destruction of America and its fundamental protections? Someone's going to have to explain that to me. It's this deleterious distortion that we see. Because I'm apparently too ignorant and incapable to figure it out or handing my critical thinking to anyone that would impress P.T. Barnum for their skill in hunting down and capturing those suckers born every minute. Right, P.T. Barnum Muskrat? I don't see many people thinking anymore. It's starting to bother me a bit. Quite a bit, actually. Not everybody, obviously, but enough. Remember, the obligation is to throw off tyranny. You can't do that if you have a divided consideration. You can't do that if you don't know what the basis is. You can't do that if you don't know what you're talking about. And in particular, you can't expect that from someone who takes an oath and then doesn't know what the oath meant. And maybe we found that problem with these people who take that oath to a constitution that they are not literate or intelligent enough to know what the meaning was. And remember, these are the people that other citizens among you look up to and vote into office. As we read, Noam gets habeas corpus definition wrong. Homeland Security Secretary claims it actually allows presidents to suspend rights. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says that the constitutional provision that allows people to legally challenge their detention by government is actually a tool the Trump administration can use in broader crackdowns at the U.S.-Mexico border. She called habeas corpus, quote, a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country and suspend their rights. Noem, testifying before a congressional committee Tuesday, gave that response when asked by Senator Maggie Hassan to define the legal concept. That's incorrect, the New Hampshire Democrat swiftly interrupted Noem, defining the legal principle that requires that the government provide a public reason for detaining and imprisoning people. Now, interject and remind you all, when I was talking about the great Coby swindle, this was a demonstrable exigence, wasn't it? The government has to provide a lawful reason. And you watch that get flushed right down the COVID-infested toilets, didn't you? Across the world, even. Except a couple of places, which I told you early on were the measure that we could use, but they weren't even in the United States. But here we have it, official, can't even define what a habeas corpus is. It's something that they took an oath to. Hassan, a former attorney who practiced in Boston, went on to call habeas corpus the foundational right that separates free societies like America from police states like North Korea. And I want you to remember that. So if they get rid of these due processes and habeas corpus rights, you're living in a police state. Well, guess what? I can show you that we live in one or two or three anyway. And what they do is they give lip service to all this. And that is still better than not having it, I'll tell you that. It gives you a place to make that record, and that's maybe just enough time to get people interested. The Latin term means literally, you have the body. Federal courts use the writ of habeas corpus to bring a prisoner before a neutral judge to determine if imprisonment is legal. The back and forth follows comments by White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller, who said earlier this month that President Trump is looking for ways to expand his administration's legal power to deport migrants who are in the United States illegally. To achieve that, Miller said that the administration is, quote, actively looking at suspending habeas corpus. Habeas corpus was included in the Constitution as an import from English common law. Parliament enacted the Habeas Corpus Act of 1679, which was meant to ensure that the king released prisoners when the law did not justify confining them. So am I looking back on what I was just reading there and who said it and what? I wonder, are these people jab harm? What else can be the reason? Are they jab harm? Are we watching this in real time? I told you to be careful about what this might be coming down. And remember who started at warp speed, the jabs. If you think that this is a Republican and a Democrat thing, remember, if you agree with what that representative said, you're agreeing with a Democrat if you are a political person. That's right, a political person. So be careful on getting too into the parties. They're not here for us. It's there for us, and they're not. And they don't even understand that oath. And shame be on me to say, oh, the lawyer didn't get it right, and this time this lawyer from Boston, who is a representative, did get it right and did call Noam on the carpet. Just to watch that video was pretty astonishing, just disgraceful. This is a violation of that oath. And I don't hear anybody really railing about it. Now, I've been speaking about this ICE's immigration agency these last few episodes, but gathering together all databases to pull from all over the nation, and actually it goes international. What if it's not only immigrants, see, is the problem now? Airlines are selling your data to ICE. Now, I've questioned this in the other article last episode, and I think it was an episode before, relative to why are they collecting U.S. citizens' data? Why are they checking your entry in or your exit out? What is all this? People seem to be okay with it. What they're okay with is because they have to go make a living. They don't want to be interrupted. They got a vacation to go have. They don't want to talk about it. And that's the exploitation that's being, that's the distraction that's used as an exploitation against we the people. An aviation industry clearinghouse is collecting data on air travelers from billions of flights and selling it to Trump's immigration enforcers. The data, including full flight itineraries, passenger name records, and financial details, which are otherwise difficult or impossible to obtain for past and future flights, is fed into a secretive government intelligence operation called the Travel Intelligence Program and provided to immigration and customs officials, that's ICE, and other federal agencies, the records reveal. Details of this program were outlined in a procurement document released Wednesday by ICE, which is a division of the Department of Homeland Security. Privacy and travel industry experts interviewed by Lever said that the law enforcement access to such a database with little information on what the privacy or other restrictions are in place raises serious civil liberties concerns. Not civil rights here, that's your civil liberties. Quote, this is probably the single most significant aggregate repository of data about American air travelers, said Edward Hochbrook, an expert in travel data privacy. Quote, that the government has gotten access to it is a very big deal. When a passenger buys a flight through a travel agency, including via common online booking sites like Booking.com or Expedia, the transaction is fed through the airline's reporting corporation, which acts as an intermediary between travel agencies and airlines. So although most airline passengers have never heard of ARC, there's a good chance that their data has at some point passed through the company. Its data set includes information on 54% of all flights taken globally, according to the company's website. In a statement to the Lever, a spokesman for the company said that the travel intelligence program, quote, was established after the September 11th terrorist attacks to provide certain data to law enforcement for the purpose of national security matters and criminal investigations. That was a little attachment that they put on why the FBI translated from an investigatory body into a global body, if you remember. So it goes right on back to what I've been saying, that Patriot Act, that terrorist attack to 9/11 was used as the excuse to do this to us and to take us down. And they did it. In 2020, I was telling you as we go rolled into the year 2020, this is a numerical year. This is a meaning in the hindsight 2020. I declared that. I said what's coming on is going to be a medical emergency, and they're going to see whether or not we learned a lesson since 9/11. And I said at that time, I hope we did, but I wasn't going to be too confident that we did. And you saw how we failed. And so I look at all this and what's going on with ICE and these databases pulling together, as I've explained for over a decade now, what's coming and doing, and they're working on it. It gets secretly, they go through all, you watch, in this case, you go through the follow the money, the procurements. And I look at this and I see no response, actual good responses from people. Well, we Trump, and he's bringing it on. I can't, there's no other thought that comes to my mind when I was reading this article. This society is done. It'll be done before people get wind of what's happening to them. Even after hearing it from behind the woodshed over a decade before today. Or, I'm open to have you change my mind. And I hope someone does, because I don't see it. I mentioned last episode also the U.S. economy is going to be having trouble despite what Trump promotes. And this week we get some confirmation. And again, I'm not doing, I guess I got to keep saying this. I don't know, people don't quite get it. And I guess I can't stop that anyway. But I'm not here to really dump on Trump. I'm here to show you that there's ways to look at this stuff. And you can put the rose-colored glasses on if you want. Or you can listen to what I'm saying and go do the basic research to find out if it's true or not, but whether it and how it might affect you or not. And then you understand where you need to start positioning yourself as the future rolls on to the future that they want. And, that no more people than what we see come and listen has really been a surprise to me. And that people aren't interested, again, I have to look out and say, this society, as we thought it was, is done. I'll be happy to be wrong on this one. But here we have a more confirmation, and there's political reasons for all this as well. This organization didn't even declare as I understand a couple of things, it didn't declare the Great Depression as a mark against the United States, but there might be a reason for that, because it was a plan. If we look through the history of that, that was a setup for the takedown. And the people got taken down again after that. But Moody's delivers the first U.S. credit rating downgrade since 1917, interestingly, right after 1913, isn't it? That was supposed to not get hot. They were supposed to stop this with all that, weren't they? But they didn't, and no one paid attention and said, hey, wait a minute, this is an indication we need to bail now, stop. Well, we haven't, and look where we continue to be and go. The reduction comes shortly after the Treasury Secretary warned of possible default by the end of summer. Moody's has stripped the U.S. of its perfect AAA credit rating, citing increasing concerns over debt affordability. The rating agency has held the country's sovereign credit rating at the highest possible level since 1917. Can I go back there for you if you didn't do it yourself? When I said credit, let's replace that word, scratch it out, and then say debt. This nation is a debtor nation. And I've said over and over, and go look for the law, the principles that prove it, debtor, not a master be. And yet they want to call it sovereign credit. The move brings a 116-year-old agency into line with its global rivals. Fitch Ratings downgraded the U.S. rating to AA+ from AAA in August 2023. Standard & Poor's cut it to AA+ from AAA in August 2011. The reduction of AA1, quote, reflects the increase over more than a decade of government debt and interest payment ratios to levels that are significantly higher than similarly rated sovereigns, Moody said in a statement released on Friday. The agency noted the successive U.S. administrations and the Congress have failed to reach an agreement on measures to reverse the pattern of the large annual fiscal deficits and rising interest costs. Interest costs. If you're a sovereign, what's the interest and to whom and why? And why'd you do that to yourself? So many questions, so little time, and we're not getting an answer. But no, Trump, 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 we're going to pass the big, beautiful bill, and you haven't read it, kept up, it just went up. So they're not cutting any of this. Moody stated, however, that the U.S. retains exceptional credit strengths. We can make more debt. What is that? That's on your back. Well, listener, that's on your back. The full faith and credit, whatever the heck that means. Full faith and credit of the United States is what is the open purse, the bottomless pit, apparently, until everybody says, wait a minute, that actually can't happen. And then the whole thing, the house of cards comes crashing down. And people know that no. And so what they're doing is they're going into silver and gold. And they want to go to Bitcoin, however, I don't know. Yeah, it's on highs, but that's what they want to get. They want to get everyone into that. I told you there's a whole reason why they want to get people into digital token citizenship. So they're going to make a big inducements on how exciting it is to get into it. Now, if you're in it, you made well. Good for you. Congratulations. I said, do it if you can stand the speculation. If this thing shuts down, and I say if, I don't know so much sometimes, but I haven't seen it go opposite what I've been watching and reading. If this thing does go down and there's a chaotic problem, or Spain or Portugal happens, it's going to start showing a lot of weakness. And the only thing you're going to have is what you have in your hands. The agency noted the successive U.S. administrations and Congress have failed to reach an agreement on measures to reverse the pattern and the rising interest costs that are going to start speeding up here. Moody's stated, however, that the U.S. retains exceptional credit strengths, citing the size, resilience, and dynamism, and the role of the dollar as a global reserve currency. And again, look very carefully. It's starting, again, this is over many years now. It's now losing that character. And it's done on purpose as well. This is literally the plan to normalize the world to a globalism. And it's a financial takedown. It's an economic takedown. It's an economic control. And you see that in Agenda 2030. There is no sovereigns. They're all debtors. Every one of those people get involved in that. And I'd say people, because corporations are people too. They say that governments are sovereign. Well, they're not if they're debtors. Earlier this month, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent warned about the possibility of a default as soon as August, calling for either raising or suspending the debt ceiling, the statutory limit on how much the federal government can borrow to avoid running out of money to cover federal expenses. Well, they just look at the full faith and credit. There's a bottomless pit. They just pull from there, don't they? The U.S. reached a ceiling of $36.1 trillion in January. Once the limit is hit, the government is legally barred from borrowing further to meet its obligations. The total federal debt has climbed to $36.2 trillion, according to official figures. The Treasury has avoided a default by using so-called extraordinary measures, mainly accounting maneuvers such as suspending contributions to federal employee retirement funds to keep up with its financial commitments. Commenting on the rating downgrade, White House spokesman Kush Desai said on Friday that the Moody's would not have stayed silent as the fiscal disaster of the past 4 years unfolded if the agency, quote, had any credibility, close quote. He also claimed that the Trump administration is currently dealing with a mess left by the previous administration. And a mess indeed. Messianic, even, folks. No matter how big, beautiful, and terrific Trump says it is. And it's no excuse that Trump inherited it if nothing substantial changes. And it is not. Look at what they're doing. Nothing's changing, it seems. We'll get a lot of noise, we get a lot of fluff on the tariffs and a lot of things going on, but nothing substantial at the fiscal, the lawmaking side. As I said, he's completely powerless there. And the advice that was given from the last episode is be the bank. And the banks are moving to gold, and for the man or Main Street to move, likely has to go to silver. Those of you that can go for gold, maybe consider it. For those daily things, man on the street, Main Street, silver will be the money. Because master, not a debtor, be. And that's what you're dealing in fiat. You're agreeing to be a debtor to someone else's currency on top of that. And it's not called debtor's prison for nothing. And that's the entirety of the United States under a fiat system. Again, pay attention. Heed the warnings here. They're explaining what's going on. You can be positioned in to keep our positions where they are, being led by the nose to be drowned, or we can start to do best we can late in the game here, start moving things into a more, well, if you get out of fiat, you're not a debtor anymore, aren't you? You start moving to that sovereign capacity. I talked about Basel III last episode, and so there's the mark. The globe is moving. The world's moving over. China's unloading of U.S. treasuries. Quiet dollar ditching strategy in action kind of undermines the last article talking about the strength of the dollar, doesn't it? News that the UK has replaced China as the second biggest foreign holder of U.S. treasuries is a sign of the Asian nation's long-term policy goal of expanding the reach of its own currency without rocking the boat of global financial stability. While China's treasuries holdings fluctuate over time. Quote, the background is that China is in the long term wants to do away with the dollar, McLeod, a leading independent money and credit specialist explained to Sputnik. Quote, China is making fairly positive moves in that direction to spread the use of her own yuan for trade rather than the dollar within certainly the ASEAN, ASEAN nations, and also that will be extended to members of the Shanghai Corporation Organization and also BRICS. To that end, the recent opening of Shanghai Gold Exchange vaults in Hong Kong and Saudi Arabia are important steps toward the internationalization of the yuan for trade. But it's absolutely clear, particularly since President Trump came into office, that the Asian hegemons, China and Russia, have been keen to distance themselves from depending on the West for finance, for capital, and for political influence and commercial trade. And to that extent, China has particularly been switching her export market away from America. According to The Economist, it's important to distinguish between Chinese and British-Japanese investment in U.S. treasuries. China's holdings are owned by the People's Bank of China, whereas the U.K. and Japan, its financial institutions, banks, instrument managers, and offshore U.S. interests looking for superior bond yields. It's very different in character compared to China, McLeod said. China sees its treasury holdings as a part of its foreign exchange reserves, accumulated mainly through its massive trade surpluses with other countries, and used to manage dollar holdings and ensure currency exchange rate stability. Quote, China has this view that she doesn't want to, if you like, be responsible for creating the West's financial problems. She will do what she can to protect herself, but she won't go out aggressively to try and disrupt Western capital markets. But as to Russia anticipating, or as I reported on that, then planning for this future, Russia sold off virtually all of its U.S. treasuries in 2018 amid U.S. readiness to use the dollar as a weapon. So remember, I reported on all of this dynamic I was working through, even China, way back when. And this is now coming to awareness and in the news. Watch it go on. You can deny it if you want. It's happening. And bringing in more context to this, Britain's treasury holdings haven't been higher than China since October 2000. China and the UK have flipped places in the ranking of top foreign holders of U.S. treasuries. And Japan's treasury holdings remain the world's largest, currently standing at $1.13 trillion. Japan's warned in early May that it could use its holdings as a trump card in trade talks with Trump. But I'm not so sure how that threat is going to work out for Japan, but we got a clue in this report that China doesn't want to, quote, be responsible for creating the West's financial problems, as the Economist phrased it. If you wrap your head around how a debtor system functions, you are contributing to the problem if you use the fiat. And what does that mean make America? I can suggest not great again or ever while embracing a fiat or fraudulent debt system. Because, again, master, not a debtor, be. Trump is nowhere near demanding like he does upon everything or everyone else he bullies, demanding, let alone advocating, getting us back to sound money system. Which, by the by, also wouldn't have the debt servicing burden that the taxes, that civil right of extortion that's upon you all that you must cover. So that's a $1 trillion millstone around the neck of the extortion payers. Poof! Gone. Doesn't exist. That's what the gold sound money would do for those people that can hold it. No, he didn't say to get rid of the fiat debtor system to make great America great again. He said he wouldn't mind a tiny bit more extortion to continue feeding the beast. What Trump said there. Read the news. And then with this fiscal appropriation and all these things going on, speaking of money truly and well flushed, Trump, the Golden Dome will cost the United States about $175 billion, according to Trump. This missile defense system is necessary for the United States for survival and for success. The president claims that the Golden Dome will be based on next-generation technologies deployed on land, at sea, and in space. Trump also called the architecture of the missile defense system being created a work of art. Sounds a lot like Reagan, doesn't it? It's also said to be like Israel's work of art, except that Israel can't stop the Houthis' missiles or its hypersonics, nor those of Iran, if you just remember recent history. So don't get rid of your behind the woodshed Wile E. Coyote Acme umbrella quite yet, please. And speaking of Iranian confidence in their capabilities, a leader of Iran, Imam Khamenei, in the reaction to Trump's remarks, some of the remarks made during POTUS's visit to the region are not even worth responding to. He says the level of these comments is so low that it brings shame to the one who said them, and shame to the American people. Let's leave most of it aside, but there are 1 to 2 points that should be noted. Trump said he wants to use power for peace. He lied. He and other American officials have used power not for peace, but for massacres in Gaza, for starting wars wherever they could, and to support their proxies. Who has used power for peace? Yes, power can be used for peace and security, and there, for this very reason, we will, despite our enemies, continue to increase our own power day by day, God willing. But they haven't done that. They've used the power to provide 10-ton bombs to the Zionist regime to drop on the heads of children in Gaza, on hospitals, in the homes in Lebanon, and wherever else they could. Now, want us to be thinking about the truth of that. Don't think it's Iran or some foreign enemy or some terrorist. The man say making a statement. Is it true or it's not? If it's true, we're going to have to take cognizance of that as we, the people in America, watching officials that, again, talk out of both sides of their mouth, talk with forked tongue, talk as Janus with two heads. There was another report about that. I think it's so important that what we're seeing now is people, countries not being afraid to now mention how the United States is really disgraceful. And they make it, they call that right out. Iran's leader slams Trump for disgraceful remarks during that Middle East tour that I discussed last episode. The pushback comes after the United States president accused Tehran's leadership of being corrupt and ineffective. The level of those remarks is so low that they are a disgrace for the one who uttered them and a disgrace to the American nation, he said, to the chance of death to America amid others from the crowd. Khamenei added that Trump lied when he said he wants to use power towards peace as Washington has backed massacring Palestinians and others across the region. He called Israel a dangerous, cancerous tumor that must be uprooted. Meanwhile, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian also told a gathering of Navy officers on Saturday that Trump is extending a message of peace while threatening destruction at the same time as backing Israel's genocide in the Gaza Strip. Well, which one of this president's words should we believe? His message of peace or his message of massacre of human beings? The Iranian president said, pointing out that Trump sanctioned the International Criminal Court in a move that was intentionally, internationally criticized. And this is the problem with Trump. It's not just the guy behind the woodshed noticing it. The world sees it. And it's not impressed. The world also acknowledges in the comparison that Trump could be the peace president he claims he intends to be. And that will be his greater disgrace unless he gets his actions and rhetoric consistent really fast. Remember, you know them when you see them. You know them by their deeds, indeed. You shall know them by their fruits. By their fruit, you will recognize them. From any religious perspective, the Iranians asked, which one of these president's words should we believe? His message of peace or his message of massacre of human beings? As I've said previously, strategic ambiguity will no longer work here. Why is Trump relying on it? And speaking of the great cancer, Israel proposes Gaza aid distribution tied to biometric facial recognition. How consistent, folks? Facial scans become the price of survival in a system where privacy is no longer negotiable. I've told you, there's an open-air prison over there. Don't think it's not here at home or anywhere now. Here at home in the United States, in America. Facial scans become the price of survival in a system where privacy is no longer negotiable. We'll listen to last episode about that. Israel has endorsed a new aid distribution framework in Gaza that places facial recognition technology at its center, triggering widespread alarm over privacy concerns. I guess genocide's not bad enough, huh? The system, still without external funding, would restrict food access to those who do not undergo biometric screening. As outlined by journalist Daniel Estrin, Palestinians would be required to register at specific collection points and submit to facial scans before receiving food parcels. The Palestinians would be coming to these places, registered and screened through facial recognition technology. They'd pick up parcels for their family. The proposal comes amid broader biometric expansion across Israeli-controlled areas. Over the past year, facial recognition tools have been used integrated into border operations in the West Bank. Please, folks, listen back to last episodes, what I've been pulling back and pulling through. And consider the integration of all this. We're here in one place actually functioning and the demands, and we look to the word survival. Your survival depends on this. And I'm going to suggest that if you're not standing on the train track when that locomotive comes down on time, you're not going to be affected by it. And that's what I'm asking. I've been asking everybody for a decade and a half, start considering what I'm saying. Go research it out. Go learn it. Find out how it applies to you. And just don't be on the tracks. And we found out when the train started blowing up, maybe don't be anywhere near a track. In Gaza, similar surveillance system developed by companies such as CoreSite and leveraging Google Photos has already been used by the military, which firm would implement the new aid-related surveillance remains unknown. And I was just informed the open-air prison in Palestine is reminiscent, or it's very similar to the open-air prison we call America, America. I was just informed that people going to food banks to get food here in the U.S. are now being required to use a UPC code that attaches to their personal application that they file to get the food. This is on their survival level. It seems just a matter of time before facial scanning and tracking is the non-negotiable price to eat. And it would be a far stretch to think it's DNA biometrics next. I'm also told people are not showing up to get food because of it. So starving, but free. What a choice. Just like in Palestine. What about that DNA? Regeneron buys 23andMe, people's DNA data, for $256 million. A corporate salvage deal turns into a genomic land grab as Regeneron inherits the DNA of 15 million people. Regeneron has moved to purchase 23andMe for $256 million following a bankruptcy auction that placed the troubled genetic testing firm's future and its massive DNA database up for grabs. The acquisition would hand Regeneron control over 23andMe's genetic analysis service and a data repository built from the 15 million individuals who submitted personal and genetic information over the years. The pharmaceutical, let me repronounce that correctly now, the pharmaceutical company stated that it sees these information as a tool for accelerating drug development. And I just interject there, remember what the United States government biolabs are doing in Ukraine and doing genetically focused bioweapon. It also pledged, again, pledges mean nothing, but it also pledged that it would prioritize the privacy, security, and ethical use of 23andMe's customer data, close quote. A promise that comes amid mounting concerns over how the information might be handled under new ownership. But in the age of biometrics, the transfer of such deeply personal data and when a new buyer raises significant or privacy concerns, DNA is not like a credit card number. It cannot be changed or reissued if compromised. It holds information about a person's ancestry, health predispositions, and even familial relationships. The potential for misuse, whether through re-identification, unauthorized sharing, or discriminatory profiling, is enormous. 23andMe filed bankruptcy in March, just months after the damaging data breach exposed the records of 7 million users. The breach, which unfolded over a course of the 2023, deeply eroded trust in the platform and drove consumer demand from its home DNA kits into sharp decline. As its stock price collapsed and public confidence waned, longtime CEO and co-founder Ann Wojcicki stepped down, marking the company's formal descent into insolvency. The bankruptcy proceeding placed oversight of the company's sale in the hands of a federal court, prompting growing unease over the possibility that its vast data archives would be transferred to entities with questionable intentions and inadequate safeguards. Let me just interject there. What are the adequate safeguards in a digital Siberian gulag? What are they? The hardware is compromised. The software is compromised. The power system is compromised. What is a safeguard in this system? The privacy advocates argue that Regeneron may assert its commitment to compliance. The sale sets a troubling precedent that biometric data collected under one set of terms can be inherited and potentially exploited by another party entirely. It may be handed over to ICE for everybody. Is a fern waiting to be arrested. on some tyrant's executive official's word that may not understand what habeas corpus means. And on this ID, on these database incursions, again, just one more example. Again, I could do these day out, day in and day out. And yet your government is setting up, all these governments are setting you up to be in there. We're going to hear coming up here about going into Europe. But Coinbase breach exposes risk of digital ID. One more story just to back up what I'm saying with that guy, with that story, last story was talking about. The more data that these systems hoard, the more treasure there is for thieves to plunder. A recent Coinbase breach is yet another alarming demonstration of the dangers posed by digital ID systems that centralize vast amounts of personal information. Is ICE listening to this, folks? Are they listening? As governments around the world, P.T. Barnum Muskrat, are you listening? As governments around the world push for legislation requiring individuals to submit state-issued identification to access online services, incidents like this highlight how such policies expose users to escalating privacy threats. It's not just privacy, folks. Your survival is now in the hands of some government with this. Any whim, they can be collected up. And we're going to hear the examples of that coming right past this story here. In this case, attackers didn't need to break through firewalls or exploit obscure technical vulnerabilities. Instead, they simply paid support workers based outside the United States, individuals with authorized access to internal systems, to hand over sensitive customer data. That access allowed the attackers to collect a wide range of private information, including names, phone numbers, addresses, partial social security numbers, mass bank details, account records, and images of government-issued IDs like passports and driver's licenses. This breach is about more than stolen credentials. It was about the consequences of designing systems that require people to hand over identity documents in order to use digital platforms, systems where one bad actor or one compromised contractor can open the floodgates to millions of users' data. As more laws are introduced around the world mandating digital ID verification for accessing websites, apps, and financial tools, the risk only grows. The breach isn't an outlier. It's a warning sign, a system that demands users give up privacy in the name of security is failing at both. It isn't an outlier here, folks. Listen to that. This is the operations normal in the Siberian Gulag. Another disgraceful action by the West as we watch it, as they consume us, the consumers that we is, showing your ID to get online might become a reality. A closer look at the EU's New Age Verification app. Now, understand that governments are now issuing apps. Talk about how you got privacy when that happened. How you got security and safety when that happens. A closer look at the EU's New Age Verification app. No, not New Age. New Age. But yeah, the same thing. Coming to a website near you this summer, the European Commission is close to a solution that could force people to use their government-issued ID to get online. EDRI and EFF's concerns about threats to everyone's privacy and data protection, a chilling effect on the access to information and digital exclusion, harming the already most marginalized in society, remains unsolved. EU mini wallet app planned to check the ages of people trying to access certain platforms and services. On April 3rd of 2025, EU officials unveiled the latest plans for what they are calling the EU mini wallet. According to the European Commission, this will be a white label, multi-purpose, reusable app initially available in three EU member states as soon as this summer. Once fully rolled out, the app can be used by governments and companies across the EU to check the ages of people trying to access certain platforms and services. Whilst the Commission believe that this will make everyone safer, we argue that it's not only unrealistic, but it's also unhelpful to try to child-proof the internet. Age verification is still not a silver bullet, and creates huge, huge risk of scope creep. Creeps, all right. The EDRI network has repeatedly warned about the risk of age verification. We've seen lawmakers talking about age verification as if it's a silver bullet to all issues of young people's safety online, whilst broader issues of platform and service design, youth empowerment, and holistic societal solutions are sidelined. The reality is that these tools systematically leak data in ways that threaten the privacy and data protection rights of children and adults alike, whether they use government-issued identity cards, AI analysis predicts a person's age, or other methods. Think about that one, folks. Again, they aggregate all this information and just come up with where you are, when, and how. Maybe even those young ones, too, that you're trying to protect. We've heard that story. I already reported a couple stories about that as well. They create ways for people's digital footprint to be constantly tracked, can be a chilling effect on everyone's ability to access legitimate contact, and frequently perpetrate discrimination and exclusion. Although this step from the European Commission is reportedly to age gate access to porn platforms, the plans that have been laid out show a clear intention to control access to a much wider range of platforms and services. The new mini wallet, more problems than solution? At a public event earlier this year, a lead official for the mini wallet age verification app for project stated that that's because the wallet is only a temporary solution. It does not need to have such high levels of privacy and security. So think about that. It's only a temporary, but they're going to get everybody required to do it so they have all your information. What's the next step? But this is an absurd presumption. Since the mini wallet relies on digital identities to verify people's ages based on government-issued IDs, the highest security and privacy standards should apply. The digital identities of the European Digital Identity Wallet that will be rolled out in 2026 are governed by and related a law by the EIDAS2 regulation. Crucial technical details relevant to the implementation of EIDAS2 and the EUDI wallet are, how many wallets do you need to have in your pocket? What's going on here, folks? The EUDI wallet are currently being negotiated, but currently lack essential protections against online surveillance for anyone that uses the wallet. Besides, it's not in your pocket, is it? No, it's in your phone that you get to pay for. Despite the ongoing technical negotiations and the fact that the EUDI wallet is set to be rolled out next year, the Commission charges ahead with its plans to make the digital identity-based age verification available already this summer. So to read more about the details of that wallet, get that link. But folks, it's here, right around the corner. I don't know what you all folks in Europe are going to do. This is just right there in your face. I don't know what more to explain about that. Clearly, they're not even caring that it goes into play and that it's not being protected. But they get all their information up front anyway. And why? Why are they presuming you to be guilty of being a minor? That's what it's about. And to not be presumed a minor, you have to give your ID. Why are you being presumed guilty? What is this? Who are they that have come up with this, that everyone seems silent to? EU nations seek mandatory social media age checks. Another twist on this. Same thing, this different angle. France, Spain, and Greece, more countries now, by name, are reportedly pushing for block-wide restrictions to protect the children from harmful content. The proposed rules would require all internet connection devices to be equipped with age verification technology. Digital services ministers from the EU, three EU member states are coordinating the initiative ahead of meeting with their counterparts from the bloc on June 6th, a document cited by Bloomberg said. And I just had a flash of a thought. Why the heck? You're already paying for the phone. you have to pay it to some company. Why don't they just go ahead and put that in, that that phone is connected to an adult? We know that because it comes from a bank account, a credit card, or whatever. But anyway, this is not about logic. This is not about even really protecting the children. But it's a way to make a reason, a rationale that people allow, put them into their token citizenship in the Siberian Gulag. The three nations reportedly argue that the lack of proper and widespread age verification mechanisms make it difficult to effectively enforce age limits. Maybe that's another problem. Again, it's an excuse anyway. They aim to leverage the economic power. There's your leverage funding in a sentence right there. They aim to leverage the economic power of the EU's $450 million consumers to compel tech companies to implement robust verification systems. So you consumers are paying for it. They're not going to pay for it. We'll get the slave to pay for it. We'll get the one without capacity, presumed to have no capacity, pay for it. Globalist, the French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed on Tuesday his support for mandatory age verification for teenagers registering on social media platforms, stating that online networks have contributed to suffering and mental health issues among young people. We must protect our children, he told TF1, adding that the age verification on social networks should be imposed. But protect the children, folks. Ongoing theme. How do they intend to do that? We can read. One real ID for every social network user. That's the only way to actually guarantee minors don't access inappropriate content, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said earlier this year. Did you hear it? One real ID. Where do you think they got that idea? A real ID. It's the only way. A global real ID for the one-way ticket to that global Siberian Panopticon. Who'd have thunk it? But now a law directed to save children. It's applicable to an adult who is no longer threatened. Has to be explained to me yet. You get that, right? If you're an adult, the law doesn't apply to you. Other than just cause, right, Orwell? Zakharova, EU residents are being driven into a digital information concentration camp. Should I laugh for a little while here, folks? Residents of the European Union countries are increasingly finding themselves in a digital information concentration camp, Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said. Quote, the image of Russia in the Western media has long been formed on the basis of certain political methods, but to tell you the truth, it's not only and not so much about the image of Russia. It's about the citizens of European countries themselves, to whom their authorities, block access to alternative truthful information. Censorship, which is practiced in most European countries, is not a concern to citizens, but a tool of control. Residents of European Union countries are increasingly finding themselves in a digital information concentration camp, where the space of freedom is narrowed to these approved not in editorial office, but in the high offices of Brussels, Paris, London, Berlin, and Rome. And this is a gross violation of basic right of Europeans to know more than the authorities allow them, Zakharova wrote in a response to a question. She cited the situation with a German edition of Compact as an example. In June 2024, as soon as the editors invited Zakharova for an interview and published materials that went beyond the permitted agenda, repression began against the publication. Quote, obviously, this is such a freedom of the press in the European way. If you allow yourself to go even a little beyond the outlined lines, you will be immediately cleaned up, Zakharova added. Our country is just another convenient reason for them tightening the screws. We understand that. But do the Europeans themselves understand this? I hope that your viewers will think about this now. Isn't that just what I'm asking you here behind the woodshed? Just listen and think and go prove it out for yourself. And this is stated while Russia is creating its own digital gulag that I've identified for y'all behind the woodshed. This cracks me up. Again, you start pointing at other people doing wrong and you forget that maybe the one doing the pointing is maybe doing the same thing. Listen, maybe that she doesn't know. And I have a suspicion this sustainability thing, this global gulag thing is so subtle. It has all the good reason, warm and fuzzy. Oh, we can get kumbaya. But that's the trap, and people don't see through that. Even the best minds are missing it. Again, it's all written down to watch, and you can watch it unfold. It's pretty fascinating, generally. And the consequence, as we move in through and see the concentration camp over there in Europe, EU sanctions against me a signal to all Europeans, says a German journalist. Thomas Roper, who the EU has accused of destabilizing activities, says the bloc may soon target any critic, even without a court ruling. Now let me interject for the United States. This is what Trump is doing on the executive, not allowing or denying or fighting the need to have due process. This is that statement right there, even without a court ruling. The European Union's decision to sanction two German nationals could be set a dangerous precedent where Brussels could severely limit the rights of any critic, journalist, or blogger, Thomas Roper said to RT. Roper, who has also collaborated with RT's German-speaking service, has been accused by the bloc of destabilizing activities and slapped with an EU entry ban as well as an asset freeze. The European Council, comprising the leaders of EU states, approved the bloc's 17th round of sanctions against Russia on Tuesday. Roper and German blogger Alina Lipp, both of whom currently reside in Russia, are among the individuals the bloc is targeted for being, quote, involved in activities aimed at undermining the democratic political process in Germany. Speaking to RT later on Tuesday, Roper said the EU had introduced personal sanctions against him because he has a large audience in Germany. Brussels' latest decision to sanction EU nationals should be of great concern to all German citizens, the blogger believes. He noted that the punitive measure against him was adopted despite there being no court decision and nobody said which law I have violated, he says. Without any court decision, some bureaucracy decided to freeze my money, to forbid working, he told RT. And I remind you of the survival need challenging the integration of facial recognition, UPC codes, any other biometric that they might need. And they know right where to take you out. Follow the money, right? They forbid you having any money, and they keep you from working. Is it any different than the thing that I've been talking about for a long time relative to what's going on in this digital technocratic abomination? According to the author, the move is a signal for all people in the European Union, because if they do it to us, and this goes through, tomorrow we'll start them doing the same thing against any critic. He described the EU's allegations against him as ludicrous. I'm just a blogger sitting here in my kitchen and writing articles, and I'm destabilizing the EU, which has a €1 billion budget for media work, he quipped. But what's not funny, he noted, is that while he lives in Russia, people in Germany would have a hard time meeting their basic needs if their rights were curbed in a similar matter. You hear the UPC code to get your food box. It's already here in the United States. It's so many other places as well. If it went under the radar, the UK hit a journalist named Graham Phillips with threatening national security. In that case, the King's Judiciary agreed with the government. Surprise? As well, convicted by the Führer's court political hit against the German-American international lawyer Dr. Rainer Fulmich, who was investigating and bringing the suit for the great Covey swindle in Germany. now in solitary confinement, suffering inhumane imprisonment conditions. And getting back to that statement here by Thomas Roper, that the government sanctioned his accounts and he would have no way to make a living, don't you see the same thing tested in America with the demonetization of content, then the suspension of internet accounts to indicate this control is already has an unaccountable foothold in America, is soon to be part of the inescapable Siberian gulag, as we point to and condemn China for its oppressive social credit system called Sesame, we hear so much about. And how much worse, the free speech touting Wall Street backed Rumble, deleting over 180 accounts now that were syndicating RLM content without any notice, explanation, or appeal. Do you agree with that? What's so dangerous about getting behind the woodshed? May expose why you all should abandon Rumble for falsely representing itself to be a haven, Christian no less, for free speech, because it's not. All this control for your mind and behavior executed, let's say, by Marco Rubio, self-authenticating authoritar as well, exiling you to far-off lands in the national interest, or by some bureaucrat's click of a mouse without due process, or a truly independent and lawful judiciary to keep that tyrant in check. And what saved Thomas Roper in the German journalist case? He doesn't live in Germany. His safe haven is in Russia now. So apply this logic that you are safer abroad than at home to America. How does that make America great again, that you are safer abroad than at home? First they came for the journalists, folks. And then. And this is BTW RLM 629. And hopefully a better signal, but not much of one, I think, if we read through this. We're very close in the United States to matching Europe as the wolves knock on the digital doors, but have not gotten in yet. Florida bill requiring encryption-backed doors for social media accounts has failed. The Florida bill, which would have required social media companies to provide an encryption-backed door for allowing police to access user accounts and provide messages, private messages, has failed to pass into law. Social media use by minors bill was indefinitely postponed and withdrawn from consideration in the Florida House of Representatives earlier this week. Lawmakers in the Florida Senate have already voted to advance the legislation, but the bill requires both legislative chambers to pass it before it can become law. The bill would have required social media firms to provide a mechanism to decrypt end-to-end encryption when law enforcement obtains a subpoena. I find that statement very interesting. That is administrative. That's not judicial. Subpoenas? No warrant? Which are typically issued by law enforcement agencies without judicial oversight. There it is, right? So I guess I'm trying to show you. You read through these stories, they tell you what they're planning. Digital rights group Electronic Frontier Foundation called this bill dangerous and dumb. Security professionals have long argued that it is impossible to create a secure backdoor that cannot also be maliciously abused, and encryption backdoors put user data at risk of data breaches. Let's go back to the beginning. It's impossible, folks. And yet, these people that take oaths to the Constitution that don't know the words about believe that it is. And they're willing to pull that trigger before they've tested any of it, to make sure it's actually safe and actually effective. And we've heard all that story before. No ceasefire deal after Trump's two-hour call with Putin, but it went very well, Trump says. The only thing then that went very well was Putin agreed to continue tolerating the United States' insult because talking is better than not talking. That's all that happened. There was no announcement of a ceasefire after President Trump's two-hour phone call with Vladimir Putin on Monday, but Trump said he believes it went very well. In a Truth Social post, Trump said Russia and Ukraine will immediately start negotiations towards ceasefire and, more importantly, an end to the war. He said the Vatican has stated that it would be very interested in hosting the negotiations. The tone and spirit of the conversation were excellent, Trump said. If it wasn't, I would say so, now rather than later. And I just interject, there's no substance to that either. You just hear it. He'll tell you, but there ain't no substance if he was going to tell you. Putin takes on the call. The New York Times reports that Trump's version of the call was far more positive than that offered by Putin, who said the call had been very meaningful and quite frank, but did not reveal any breakthroughs. Putin said Russia was willing to work toward a ceasefire, but he repeated his long-standing demand. Let me repeat that. He repeated his long-standing demand from before this thing got started over there that the United States fomented since 2014. The long-standing demand that any deal to end the war would have to remove the root causes of this crisis. Trump focuses on trade. Quote, Russia wants to do large-scale trade with the United States when this catastrophic bloodbath is over. And I agree, Trump wrote. There is a tremendous opportunity for Russia to create massive amounts of jobs and wealth. It's potentially unlimited. Misdirection here, folks. I told you, Trump has no cards. He's trying to figure out a way out. He's trying to find that off-ramp, they call it. But he can't. And he's not willing to stop the weapons or the intelligence. Likewise, Ukraine can be a great beneficiary of trade in the process of rebuilding its country. Sources tell the Wall Street Journal that in a quick call to Volodymyr Zelensky, before the Putin call, Trump asked the Ukrainian leader what he should talk to Putin about. Zelensky told Trump he should push for a 30-day ceasefire and agree to a meeting with Putin that Zelensky could attend. Trump was expected to have a longer call with Zelensky later that day. Vance, the U.S., quote, is more than open to walking away. We realize there's a bit of an impasse here, Vance says, talking before Trump's call with Putin. The president's going to say to President Putin, look, are you serious? Are you real about this? He added that if Russia doesn't appear interested in the peace deal, we're more than open to walking away. It takes two to tango, he said. If Russia is not willing to do that, then we're eventually going to have to just say, this is not our war. It's Joe Biden's war. It's Vladimir Putin's war. So, Mr. Vance, if it is Biden's war but not our war, and since it takes two to tango, when you say we're more than open to walking away, does that mean pulling funding, material, and intelligence from Ukraine and walking away to let them work it out? Or does it mean walking away from condemning the Ukraine government for violating the first two sections, at least, of the International Declaration of Human Rights? And does it mean walking away from the coup the United States caused precipitating the conflict? Is that what you mean by walking away? Or does it mean walking away from peace to continue to support another genocide fighting to the last Ukrainian, like the United States supports the illegal belligerent occupier Zionist Federation movement genocide to the last Semitic Palestinian? Quote, which one of these presidents' words should we believe? His message of peace or his message of massacre of human beings? Which is it? Because it's sounding like Trump's words are deceptive and nothing but deception. Being Donald Trump said he would consider the option of increasing arms sales to Kiev, but believes in resolving the conflict in Ukraine. The United States president added that there is a chance to achieve peace in Ukraine, so he does not tighten sanctions against Russia. Now, he said this after calling Pinocchio Linsky, who said regarding removing troops from the land Russia has taken and since was abandoned by the Ukraine, he said, never. Ukraine will not withdraw its troops from parts of its own territory and will not succumb to Russia's ultimatums. As if the U.S. puppet has Trump by the short ones. Where is that puppet anyway? Never mind. Too much information. How does an authentic peacemaker say these things or act this way to foster and encourage or continue war? How can he say it's not his war, but he sent those javelins during the Trump 1, promising more war through increasing arms supplies in Trump 2? Of course it's Trump's war. He did not stop it when he had the opportunity before Biden. How can Trump or Vance be taken credible in this shuck and jive dive? And also, it's not good enough that Trump hands the obligations of the United States to Europe after putting Ukraine in this predicament in its 2014 coup and overthrow, given its problem to a gaggle of European psychopaths intending war with Russia, or particularly where the United States is still a NATO member using then a psychopath proxy while still supplying it arms. Trump admitted that the United States would cede Europe a role in the settlement in Ukraine. If there is no significant progress on Ukraine, the United States will cede its role in the settlement to Europe, Trump said. Trump said that he has a point of no return regarding the efforts to resolve the conflict in Ukraine, but he is not going to talk about it. And how does the United States cede something if it doesn't own it? The United States is discussing the introduction of European troops west of the Dnieper River. It is not the action taken by a peacemaker to enable a perpetual state of a war. The United States is discussing the placement of Ukraine-received European peacekeepers west of the Dnieper River after the end of the conflict. It can be the military of Britain, France, Germany, and Poland, he noted. Then I guess it can be the military of the United States there, too. Right, HIMARS Crew Alpha? Quote, we are talking about forces of sustainability. That is a force that is called E3, but in fact it's now E4 when it comes to British, French, and Germans. In fact, and about the Poles, the forces west of the Dnieper River which means that it is out of the contact zone, Kellogg said, quoting Commerce. According to Kellogg, the United States wants to achieve a comprehensive ceasefire on Ukraine and then move on territorial issues. Ceasefire allowing Ukraine to rearm itself to prolong and sustain its unjust war with the help of the United States is not the action of a peacemaker. Washington hopes that the Russian President Vladimir Putin will arrive in Istanbul on May 15th for talks with Ukraine. The decision on Donald Trump's arrival in Turkey also depends on this, which didn't happen. But let us hope there is no bull in the word salad Trump suggests, and the prior peace agreement made between Ukraine and Russia in Istanbul 1, which Putin brilliantly counteroffered here with this condition, comes to fruition instead of the meathead and, if the stories are true, white-nosed NATO-proposed ceasefire. We can stop being tortured by the Trump administration multiple personality disorder. Right, Sybil? But being free of the affliction appears to be hopium because no peace for Russia is intended despite any peace agreement that Trump had no part of in Istanbul. Remember, Trump has no cards. Zelensky has no cards. What you're talking about is a peace treaty. Russia is in the command seat. It's as simple as that. Kellogg also confirmed the United States wants to gain control of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. According to him, the United States is discussing the future management of the station that seeks to help in its operation. Admitting the U.S. doesn't have a legitimate U.S. interest in Ukraine, so we'll horn in to establish one peace-taking a nuclear power plant. But why would Putin agree to that when Russia isn't giving back the land the people there voted to live on and as provided by international recognition of rights to the people everywhere, actually, not just there, to become autonomous from Ukraine. Kellogg also announced the significant and most severe of all the U.S. sanctions against Russia in the absence of progress in negotiations. Quote, you know that the United States really intends to put into effect the law on sanctions against Russia in 2025, and more than 70 senators signed it, and these can be serious sanctions. So Trump could be a peacemaker, but there's no evidence yet for that, or at least stopping the strife, attacks, and turmoil Donald Bull in the China Shop Trump. Also, didn't start or continue. I don't think I've ever seen in my life someone so close to being a hero that insists instead on being a zero. He could affect peace in many areas of the world, but fails to close that deal, though taking credit for the self-inflicted make-work feats to the undying, uncritical adoration of the peanut gallery groupers at home. The nations are learning to just tolerate Trump, which is not too terrific, if not terrifically embarrassing. There's already talk of Russia moving to Plan B, giving the lack of peace initiative by the West, despite ineffective sanctions, will accept to lose the covert war against Russia, essentially what's going to happen here as well. The global war there, the United States will be losing, to include more military pressure by Russia to take more of Ukraine in its mission to denazify and to demilitarize the Ukraine as it demanded early on, which embarrassingly Trump intends to keep nazified and militarized, the peace faker he appears to be at this point, with those actions. Remember, he knows them when you see them. He knows them by their fruits. And from the No Cards, No Charisma department, U.S. President Donald Trump refused requirement to Russia on an immediate ceasefire in Ukraine. President Trump on Monday dropped his demand that Russia announce an immediate ceasefire on Ukraine, instead supporting President Vladimir Putin's call for negotiations between Russia and Ukraine. After a two-hour phone conversation with Putin, Trump said that Russia's leader had agreed immediately to begin direct negotiations with Ukraine on a ceasefire and a broader peace agreement to end the war. He said the terms would be discussed directly between the warring parties, quote, because they know the details of the negotiations that no one else knows about. Thus, Trump has moved away from recent threats to increase pressure on Russia, in particular with the help of sanctions, because Putin may not want to stop the war, and we need to fight him differently. The newspaper also suspects that the American president enthusiastically shifted the role of mediator to the Pope Leo. At the same time, the authors referred to Trump's statement published on the social network after conversations with Putin that the Vatican expressed interest in holding upcoming talks, adding, "Let the process begin." The absence of any significant breakthrough in the talks on Monday between Putin and Trump shows that how Trump's faith in his personal charisma and negotiating acumen has so far run into deep disagreements and complex political motives that guide Russia and Ukraine. After the phone conversation, Trump referred to the economic benefits of the end of the war, saying that Russia wants to participate in large-scale trade with the United States when this catastrophic bloodbath ends, representing the end of the conflict as a business proposal, not a diplomatic victory. So pause it here, folks. You're understanding the dynamic shifting completely right underneath Trump's feet. He's got nothing to do here. No cards, no charisma, no excuse for attacking America and the world at warp speed either. Our government knew the COVID shots were neither safe nor effective, yet unleashed a global propaganda campaign to coerce the public into getting it. I'm sure those of you listening behind the woodshed, or those of you who did your own study, understand that was known a long time ago. What you're seeing is the news finally coming around to telling everyone. Top federal health officials actively took steps to delay warning the public for months in 2021 after the potential risk of heart-related complications from receiving mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, a scathing interim report from Senator Ron Johnson's office alleges. Watch the bouncing ball here, folks. Be careful of what they're admitting and then understand what they're not. Starting in February 2021, federal health agencies had been alerted to large reports of myocarditis in young people who received the Pfizer vaccine but waited until late June that year to adjust the vaccine labels to make them side effects known. Myocarditis is an inflammatory condition of the heart muscle, while pericarditis entails inflammation of the lining sac around the heart. Myocarditis is a combination of two ailments. Quote, even though CDC and FDA officials were well aware of the risk of myocarditis fighting a COVID-19 vaccination, the Biden administration opted to withhold issuing a formal warning to the public for months about the safety concerns, jeopardizing the health of young Americans, the 54-page interim report said. His report explained that some available data raised concerns about myocarditis in early 2021, but top health brass really began examining the matter after February 28, 2021, when an Israeli Ministry of Health official attempted to contact the CDC and Food and Drug Administration about 40 cases of myocarditis and other health-related ailments in young people from Pfizer vaccine. So you hear the propaganda going all this time, every paragraph of what it is. I've been quiet about telling you, highlighting it. I'm just going to do it right there to call your attention. The propaganda continues despite an exposure, despite a disclosure. There's still a lie going on, a bunch of them actually. At the time, Israel had a much higher vaccination rate than the U.S., the report noted. About 10 days later, an FDA official drafted a response noting that limitations of passive surveillance and incomplete data makes it challenging to assess causation. U.S. health officials requested more data from the Israelis. By mid-April, a Defense Department contractor involved with Pentagon's work on immunization delivered a presentation to the COVID-19 Vaccine Safety Technical Working Group that concluded, quote, there is a high likelihood that cardiac symptoms following COVID-19 vaccination represent a hypersensitivity eosinophilic myocarditis. Can I read the first part of that again? And you tell me why these folks are involved. But also, if you listen long enough behind the woodshed, didn't I mention this going into 2020? That Sasha Lakhapova's research proved out later. By mid-April, a Defense Department contractor involved with the Pentagon's work on immunization delivered a presentation to the COVID Vaccine Safety Technical Working Group. What were they being involved with? Well, we know what it is now. Not many people understood what was hitting them in the, right between the eyes and what to do about it. Anybody listening behind the woodshed got it straight up ahead of that whole problem. And on the heels of that report, and it's just an interim report. And remember, they just pointed out one of the ailments, the two-part ailment on that as well. And they want to suggest and continue suggesting Ron Johnson is not saying it's not a vaccine. So understand that. So on the heels of that report comes FDA expands COVID vaccine warning about heart side effect risk for young males. The Food and Drug Administration is telling Pfizer and Moderna to expand warning labels on their COVID-19 vaccines about the risk of possible heart injury side effects linked to mRNA shots, primarily teen boys and young men, citing findings from a study published last year in new agency data. Orders to expand the warnings were posted Wednesday by the FDA in letters dated April 17th. To Pfizer and BioNTech about their Comirnaty vaccine and Moderna about its Spikevax. Now, I'm going to jump past the FDA propaganda. As I just said, Ron Johnson himself is still promoting that it's a vaccine. Still promoting that. Maybe that's the only thing, the only evidence they have is myocarditis, and we know it's so much worse. They're still promoting it's safe and effective, except for that. So I'm going to jump past, in this article, the FDA propaganda wants to sell it hard all the time, to read similar to what the study described, the FDA's new warning also says that the heart MRI findings showed improvement over time in most people. Most? Is this Russian roulette as well? Quote, it is not known if these heart MRI findings might predict long-term heart effects of myocarditis. The studies are underway to find out if they are long-term heart effects of people who have had myocarditis after receiving an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine, the FDA said. But they said they're also safe and effective. Can you imagine all the things that are hidden when they don't suffer the scrutiny that the great COVID swindle is causing to these mRNA bioweapons? Notice no one, not even the Congressional Committee or Congressman Ron Johnson, is identifying these substances as bioweapons. Not one word. So that much is also a continuing cover-up. So now you can see how they do the cat box cover-up right in plain sight. There's no non-fraudulently demonstrated non-military beneficial use, therefore, as a matter of law, 50 U.S.C. and 18 U.S.C. 175, by those, they are prohibited bioweapons with criminal penalties. But with the cat box cover-up, there's no accountability. No, the FDA propaganda jumped over is the FDA continuing to sell these bioweapons to the population, which I'm not going to help promote by reading about it. You can go in. Feel free to go in to get that link. Read this article. See what they do. Maybe see how they do this to us. Become informed on the technique. How this works out. How they continue to attack us. It sounds like Ron Johnson's doing us a favor. And at some point I can agree. There's not very many people that actually see the truth. They cannot see it. They're not wired to see it anymore. They may not be intelligent enough to see it. I don't know anymore. How do you not see this? Now, I'm talking after the fact now. I'm not talking, oh, we knew it, oh, you can see it, oh, we're adverse, all that, whatever. I'm talking about looking at this thing and saying, well, why are they only talking about certain things when we know the evidence also showing a whole lot more problems? And I'm not going to go through the list. I mean, it's on and on and on. But what did we hear about those originally? I did the reports of the initial trials and studies that were going on by the companies themselves. Way, way early on. And one of the other consequences that we certainly don't see or talked about amongst all the others, and this is in vaccines so-called generally, but I want to reiterate, I've said it only a couple times, those of you that have read the local communicable disease law and think it through step by step logically, it makes no logical sense, even though that's what you rely on to protect yourself. For instance, why would you, and you're not supposed to, give a vaccine while you're suffering the infectious agent that was demonstrated in you, if it is? Why would you do that? It makes no sense. How is that going to stop you from getting it? It's not. Makes no sense. This is the other fraud. I talked about this a couple times, just mentioned it. But because it's so confusing to people to just do the black and white just to protect themselves in the initial, I didn't want to throw too much of this other information on top of the heap of something that's already not understood. But the whole process doesn't make any sense logically. But legally, you had to follow the process because that's what could protect you. But there's other things coming down. When you understand this illogical condition that the so-called medical profession has created, fabricated, wrapped around even what they would call a vaccine, and it makes no sense, then you start understanding it's just an expansion of what the military did and why they were working through contracts of demonstrations for something that didn't really exist, but it was the jab was the vector, it was the infectious agent, as I told you it would and predicted that it turns out to be. But we have more questions about these treatments. They want to call them vaccines. And there's been a big question, and someone's relative to one of the ongoing consequences, horrific consequences, a general application now. The article mapping the entire field of autism causation studies in one article. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's an article. There's going to be quite a bit here. So I'm just going to start out reading a bit of it. But I want people to be introduced to this subject matter as we're watching boys in particular, not much different in a way, not the same type of effect, but we had the young males adversely affected at much higher rates for the COVID swindle jab. That boys are getting autism at much higher rates, it appears, by what they're talking about. So this article, when one looks at the big picture, the answer becomes clear. This is written by Toby Rogers, compiled introduction. It seems to me the proper way to understand the autism epidemic is to read everything that has been written on autism causation throughout any studies that are characterized by financial conflict of interest or fatally flawed study design and see what patterns emerge from the papers that are left. Now we're watching Toby become an organic AI right here, looking for patterns, as we all do. I think I do system analysis type stuff, which I've never been trained in it. I just seem to put together things that either make sense or they don't, and then they lead you somewhere, and you follow those trails around, and you got to dismiss the things that are fatally flawed to come to certain, as I say, they're not really conclusions. They're potentials and possibilities, as I said before, probabilities, and you work it that way. That way you don't lock yourself in too much. You can hold your convictions about what you believe, but be ready to adjust with new information. During my doctoral thesis, Toby Rogers states, I have reviewed about 80 of the top studies in autism epidemiology and toxicology. That was the groundbreaking at the time because the vast majority of mainstream scholars don't have the courage to discuss any papers that threaten the profits of powerful industries. As I've continued to work in the space over the last 6 years, I now realize that here are 800 autism causation studies in the English language focused on the U.S. It's daunting to think about trying to wrap one's head around a field that large. So most public officials just grab a favorite study here and there to justify their biases, and that is exactly the wrong way to approach this topic. There has to be a better way of working through the available knowledge on the issue. Now, I believe that I've figured out how to map the entire field of autism causation studies, about 850 papers in all, in one article. If you sat down to read each article individually, it would likely take you several years. Let me interject there with similarly what I do, my little two-hour stints here once a week. The amount of information that I've had to read to be here is quite immense. You're not going to do it in just a short amount of time. It takes years. And you just have to devote that time. Find something of interest that keeps you driven in order to keep in the information. Eventually, you start getting a body of knowledge that you can work. Your library of information that starts to work, particularly after you start applying it. So, if you will, find those people that produce content that have a background that you can trust to at least get you on that path. You're talking about the trailhead. Put you on the trailhead and let you do your journey. So this is what he's telling you right here. I found it's the same thing. Whenever you get into this stuff and you focus on information, you realize it's so much information you pour through. And I appreciate the people that come forward that can articulate their positions, that can articulate their studies, and they only give us a little bitty nugget. And when you start researching it to give you the fortification, it's a lot more work. But again, once you see it in your eyes, the black and white, whatever is the study and the qualifier, the quality of the study or information, you'll never really forget it. You may not remember it all, but it registers in your mind. This would take you several years. Why I bring up this study is that you can get a summary of his many years of study in a big document. So for those of you that have little kids or going to have little kids or look around your society and see the problems that are developing, I'm starting to see more and more and more, even though I don't get out too much, I'm hearing more and more autism is just increasing. Yeah, it's a real problem. So but a lot of other things as well. So we don't want to get overwhelmed with that. But Toby says here, I would likely take you several years. I absolutely would have to agree, even though I don't even know the subject matter. Okay, just in the legal stuff, the law, the whatever, the history of things that you pull all together. But he goes on to write, but as I will show below, you don't necessarily have to do that. There is a ways to move through all the literature as a meta level that I believe leads to the right answer and a viable plan for how to stop the autism epidemic. And it's similarly what I present here, not for the autism epidemic, but for other things. Let's say the great Kobe Swindle, how to go directly to that communicable disease law, high grade out what you need, only need to focus on that, execute on that, and keep focusing on it. Don't let anybody pull you off. That's what we're talking about right here. He can show you the path to get you quicker through all that information so you become effective in helping, hopefully helping to inform other people and to help protect little ones such that you're interested to do. It's not for everybody. I'm not saying it is. But there's so many subject matters that anybody can do with this. Let's start with a quick introduction and then get into the different types of studies. Again, I'm not going to go through all this. It's just the introduction. We'll see what goes on from there for you. In the early 1980s, vaccines were so harmful that vaccine manufacturers were routinely lost in court. They lobbied the U.S. Congress to pass the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act to give themselves liability protection. And they pinky swore to make vaccines safer, but there was no legal mechanism in the bill to enforce the promise, so they never did. When I say earlier, pledges and promises are valueless, useless, mean nothing. I don't care who gives you one. I don't care how great you like them, what kind of charisma they have or don't have. Pharmaceutical companies proceeded to add as many vaccines, they call them here, as possible to the schedule. Prior to 1986, there were 3 routine vaccines, totally 7 injections. Today, the CDC maternal and child and adolescent vaccine schedules include 19 vaccines requiring 76 injections with 94 total doses of antigen. Parenthetically, I'm actually less worried about the antigens than the other ingredients in these shots. No one in a position of authority bothered to measure the impact of the growing vaccine schedule on the health of children. And this is what I mentioned a long time ago, the cumulative effects. And if we even got into sustainability, they rail on that. That's how they can take everybody down. Well, you haven't looked at the cumulative. The cumulative effects are, well, we go years and years and years. And so then they get you that way. And then they throw in the precautionary principle. None of which has been applied to vaccine, even if we embrace sustainable development. But no one in a position of authority bothered to measure the impact of the growing vaccine schedule on health of children. And if you go into, let's say, the NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, they are required to look at those impacts. Why aren't they with the health of your little ones? Anyway, I'm interjecting a lot more here than what's written, but it's so important to what he's writing here so far in the introduction. There's so much more to expand upon. Lots of subject matters. He can speak to this. Like I'm just pointing out, I can speak to a lot of others, just like through these words. And there's another subject matter that's been mistreated by officials that we let them over to do for us, and they failed us. Most regulators were auditioning for HRMA because that's where the money is. Politicians depend on HRMA donations for their reelection campaign. The mainstream news media get most of their revenue from HRMA advertisement, so they were never going to bite the hand that feeds them. Parma invested heavily in public relations to lay siege to any remaining pockets of resistance. Mercury, thimerosal, was grandfathered in as a generally recognized as safe because it's easier to do that than actual safety testing. Aluminum adjuvants were allowed with only minimal safety testing. One man, three rabbits, and ever-moving goalposts. Chapter 9 of my thesis covers the regulatory history of aluminum adjuvants. The gold rush was on so vaccine manufacturers were free to add whatever they wanted to vaccines, and they would all be approved because the regulators of the medical industry were captured mind, body, and spirit by Harma. And I want to interject here. You see, that's been used by Robert Kennedy Jr., their regulatory capture. He says that, and he tries, and he gets people to agree, and we all look and see that they're captured. This author says it, they're captured by Harma. That's Kennedy's license to go ahead and do what he wants, because, oh, he's on the job, when he may not be, and I don't think that he actually is. The autism rate skyrocketed in the 1990s, and has continued to increase ever since. Rates of ADHD, life-threatening allergies, autoimmune disorders, asthma, childhood cancers, diabetes, and epilepsy soared too, and those are probably vaccine injuries as well. But autism spectrum disorder, or ASD, is more costly than other conditions because it's lifelong disabilities with no known effective treatment. Parenthetically, some parents have been able to recover their children through holistic and alternative therapies, but the percentages are successful in doing so is still in single digits. At that point, the people who created the autism epidemic had to pretend to look for the cause, but they had to make sure to never find the actual cause because the flow of research funding would stop and lots of these doctors and scientists would go to jail or be hung from lampposts by angry parents and injured kids. I think that's an optimistic statement by the author here. I don't know that anything is going to happen, even if you know as a mother and father. Well, there might be a few outliers, but no, we're coddled as a society as well. But let me get you back over to Ron Johnson. By pointing out one thing, he hides the rest. It's no different than what that statement is right there. You're not going to see any actual research, your actual studies. Otherwise, people start going to jail if there's accountability. So an entire industry was created to cover up the autism epidemic. And I just can't believe that Congress wasn't part of that. It isn't part of that right now, as I'm mentioning Ron Johnson. I'm not condemning him. He may not even have a clue. I don't think a lot of people may even have a clue. And I'll let you read the rest of this story. It goes on to section 2, 22 studies in the vaccine cover-up. This is a very long piece to compile, of compiled information. Hopefully some of you can find some uses for it. It's pretty telling what's going on. He does have a graphic. You can get down near the bottom. There is a PDF. In fact, I think I'll put that in the blogcaster as well. But he's got an infographic. It's just a chart mapping the entire field of autism causation studies. And he goes through and shows these little windows. In other words, the highlights of this. And I'll just read down through them quickly here. The 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Act gave vaccine makers liability protection. Move over to the right. The vaccine schedule increased from 7 shots to 76 shots over the next 3 decades. Bubble to the left. Stepping down a bit, the autism rate went from 1 in 10,000 in 1970 to 1 in 31 children in 2025. Next bubble down, 22 studies claim the vaccines don't cause autism. All are invalid because they lack a true placebo group. For those of you that do these studies, pick that one up really well to understand how to analyze whether the studies are correct. We saw this problem in the Great Covey Swindle, manufacturers' trials and testing. Very same problem. They did the very same thing. Wasn't an actual placebo. And then the really most stupid one, when I saw the placebo they claimed was saline, their jab juice was safer than saline. The next bubble down on this, 5 large gene studies, AGRE-SSC-ASC-MSSNG-SPRK, over $2 billion, bravo dollars, spent and almost nothing to show for it because there's no such thing as a genetic epidemic. And over to the right, we see a bubble, 4 large epigenetic genes and environment studies, where they said they are all unreliable because they didn't control for vaccines. And then down to the left, another bubble. We're down to the last couple. Ozanov et al. In 2018 is the key. Up to 88% of autism cases are characterized by sudden regression, suggests an acute toxic exposure. We have eyewitness testimony from thousands of parents that acute toxic exposure was from the vaccines. The bubble to the middle in the bottom, right, moving to the right, 6 vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies. And he lists them all for you to even look if you just wanted to go down. And then the last bubble on the infographic pane says remove liability protection for vaccine manufacturers and the autism epidemic ends. And I want to throw out there at this part of the deal was the scare from the government that if it didn't act, it would be blamed for causing the death due to disease. And it brings this main argument to say that the vaccine manufacturers need the protection. And so before you go into that argument, go study that problem, how they justified the need, really just a big fear tactic. It's plausible at all, but it's not correct, versus what they actually do underneath that fear tactic. Have that under your belt before you go talking if you're finding that you find interested in this and you want to help do that last pain, remove the liability protection. Seems to be me to be the answer. And they will then be forced to do things that are safe and effective. Yeah, we may not have some so-called vaccines, but when they come out, they might actually be vaccines. But remember, as I said, the local communicable disease law makes no logical sense. It also doesn't make health sense in a way. And so I'm pointing that out again. I want to remind you, I'm pointing that out because that was the legal defense against a tyranny that they used a medical imperative against us. And so that's how we had to address that, and that's why I suggested it. And those of you that did that, you found that it was effective enough to hold off the government against you. And I see so many other things that are like that. So the very, very important information, so much to go through. I don't even have the time to even start. It's better that you see all this information and start to run it down yourself. This is a very important issue because it relates on over to every other health matter, and then you'll be able to compare what should be being done with what the government, even under Robert Kennedy Jr., is doing. And I'm finding serious defects in all of it. And a lot of it is this distraction. We'll point out a couple things, but we're not going to point out others. And we still let the corporations do their job. Why? Partly because they have the lobbying power. That may have to be addressed. So there's lots of subject matters. We're going to protect ourselves against government. We're going to have to bring it under some toe. Otherwise, as I said earlier, this society is lost. I don't know how we otherwise do it. Maybe you can explain it to me how it works. I've heard lots of people say, well, just walk away. No, it exists. It still goes after the next people. You're not going to last long enough. Your time ends on this planet. And this system goes on to hit, if you got kids, your grandkids and their grandkids. And as we see this episode, the digital gulag is upon us. It's happening. It's right here now. And all of this will be tied to that. If you don't agree to what they've done to you in the past, and you don't have these types of studies to show that it was wrong, and maybe even if you do, your objection will be enough to hit you where you need your survivability. As you saw the German journalists, they're already being attacked. And so it's here, folks. I don't know what more to say. I've been saying this. It's honest. You may not be feeling it, but the pressures are all around us. And I've told you long ago, that they go after what you need. And you're going to have to establish a life and a condition that you're not in need of a lot. Then you focus on how that system that purports to be safe and secure and lawful, you focus on how they're not. That's your only focus then, because you are not in want. Or you're not easily put, Vince, easily put into a condition of want or need or survivability, austerity. This has been BTW RLM 629. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listen to dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn, behind the woodshed, where truths are earned, from law to liberty, the spectrum line, in house court, no place to hide, a candle of bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst, behind the woodshed. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.